want
that one again.
Yeah. Just in case you want to become a volunteer, Lydia did say it's about a month training and so forth. Yeah. But you, as a volunteer, set your own schedule. So once again, what's that number?
Thank you, Leslie. It's 503-528-1738.
And we need night drivers because I want to go to Harvey's Comedy Club, and I can't go over there in the buggy by myself. I'd get attacked. So night volunteer drivers, call me at no. And I will post all this on my KBOO site, so there'll be all this information posted on my site. Go to Disability Awareness, find my name, Grace E. Reed, and all of this information will be posted over there and also on my Facebook site. So
thank you for having us, Grace.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
Want to connect KBOO on your smartphone? Now you can with the free KBOO mobile app available for both iPhones and Android devices. With the app, you can listen to KBOO live wherever you are, continuously streaming whether your phone is locked or not. Listen to our latest audio uploads. See when your favorite programs come on with our schedule. Check out our community events calendar. Read our monthly newsletters. Everything is available in one place, including posts from our Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube feeds. You don't need an account to see what's going on at KBOO. Have KBOO at your fingertips anywhere you happen to be with our new mobile app. Look up KBOO in iTunes or Google Play to download the free KBOO mobile app. Radio, live
transmission. The more compassion we have towards animals, the more compassion we're going to have towards other people.
If you can value them all, you really value yourself as well.
So even if you don't care about animals, the things we do that hurt animals end up hurting ourselves.
It's almost kind of a dominion type issue where we feel we need to control everything.
Dominion means stewardship, to take care of.
What would a cow think about satisfying our habit? The challenge lies with looking at suffering from the perspective of the person or individual suffering.
Welcome to Voices for the Animals on KBOO Portland. My name is Courtney Scott, and today we are delighted to welcome Katie Cantrell to the studio with us. Katie is the founder and executive director of the Factory Farming Awareness Coalition and a self-titled food activist. Welcome, Katie.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Tell us what inspired you to start this organization, and what is its mission, and who are the coalition members?
Well, I've always been an animal lover. I grew up with dogs. And when I went to college at UC Berkeley, I joined an animal advocacy group on campus where I learned about factory farming, and I learned that the largest source of animal suffering by far in the country is actually the food system. So that was the start of my work around factory farming. What inspired me to start the organization was shortly after I graduated, I read the book Eating Animals by Jonathan Safran Foer. Highly recommend it. I was really moved by its holistic approach. He talks, of course, about animals, but also about the impacts on public health, social justice, the environment. And I realized that when you look at all of the different impacts of factory farming, it's just so clear cut. It's bad in almost every possible way. And I thought if people just knew this information, if we could just get the truth out there to consumers, they would be motivated to take a stand and make a change. So I really started out by getting the information out there to people in the most direct way I could think of, which was giving presentations to student groups, classes, groups I had connections with about all of the different impacts of factory farming. And because we take that more holistic approach, I found that we were able to reach out to audiences who might not be interested in factory farming solely as an animal issue, but were interested in the sustainability impacts of our food system, the social justice impacts of our food system. So we were able to reach wider audiences and get them interested in this issue.
So how long have you been doing this?
Well, I started it back in 2010 just as a hobby, just me doing it as one person, and it's grown very organically from there. So we've been an organization for 3 to 4 years now. We've been a more legitimate organization.
And that's where you got some of these coalition partners. So who are they?
Yeah, so we're lucky to work with a variety of groups, and it the partnerships vary, but some of the groups that we partner with are Animal Place, which is a really wonderful farm animal sanctuary in California, which is where our headquarters is based. And they've provided us with photos and stories that we share in the presentation. So we share the stories of actual animals that were rescued from factory farms by Animal Place. We also partner with Green Monday, which is an international organization that I think I'll be talking about more in a minute.
Right, exactly. And I just want to mention, I've read that book by Jonathan Sofer. I don't know how.
Safran Foer.
And it was a very good book. He came to Portland here to speak once.
Huh.
And what the chapter that was interesting to me, I didn't know much about, was fishing.
Yes.
I mean, I don't think people really realize how harmful fishing is to the fish.
Right.
For one thing. And to the environment as well.
Definitely.
So I produced a film myself about animal rights called From Suffering to Satori that premiered here in Portland recently. And during my research for that film, I was surprised myself to learn how much of an impact factory farming has on the environment. It's dead rivers, dead fish, dead zones in the ocean, and that's just to name a few. It's a huge devastation. So tell us more about that.
Yeah, I was really shocked to learn about that. I came at factory farming as an animal issue, and so when I realized it's actually one of the single biggest environmental issues of our time, that was really moving to me. When you think about it, it's really a problem of scale. There are 9 billion animals being raised for food in the United States. So there's more farmed animals in the U.S. than there are people on the entire planet. And those are living, breathing, eating, pooping animals. So the problems lie in their whole life cycle. I mean, if you think about it, those 9 billion animals need a tremendous amount of feed. They're mostly fed GMO corn and soy, which is grown in monoculture. So that alone takes a tremendous amount of water, petrochemical fertilizers. It's monoculture, so that has impacts on driving off like the monarch butterfly population, where they're no longer the wild plants that they subsist on. And that's just one part of the food cycle. So you have the actual waste from those animals, too, once they eat all of that food. And that's one of the largest sources of water pollution in the United States, results in things like the dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico. And it's also a large source of greenhouse gas emissions, both from the animals themselves. They burp methane, especially cows and sheep, ruminant animals. And all of the poop from all of those animals releases nitrous oxide, which is a greenhouse gas that is up to 300 times worse for climate change than carbon dioxide.
Right. And, you know, I did some research about, I think it was North Carolina, where they have these giant hog farms. And it looked like quite often they would have an overrun on the cisterns where the hog waste would just overflow into the rivers and kill all the fish and make a lot of the people sick, too, who lived around there.
Yeah, there's a fantastic video on YouTube. If you Google factory farm drone, you can see it. And it shows actual footage of these gigantic lakes of pig manure in North Carolina. And the director interviews people who live near those factory farms, and their houses are literally sprayed with pig poop. They actually, to dispose of that waste, they have basically giant garden sprayers that spray that waste onto the surrounding fields, and the wind carries it into local communities. So those people have actually fainted from asphyxiation because of all the toxic fumes, and it definitely has long-term impacts on their health as well.
Yeah, and you know, I read a book about a woman, or some other people too, right here in northwest, I think it was in Washington, that sued some of the dairy farms. Because I guess they were creating a lot of problems for people, too. You know, the air was very difficult to breathe, and they couldn't even go outside their house. You know, so they did sue them. I think they won one case against a dairy farm, but I don't think most people even realize how bad dairy farms are as well, you know.
It's a huge problem in California as well. In the Central Valley, it's one of the largest sources of water and air pollution, as well as all the dairies.
The dairies, yeah. And that was another wake-up call for me, too. I didn't know until I went to a dairy and saw what's going on. So Factory Farming Awareness Coalition works on a variety of fronts then, from environmental, human justice, and animal rights. And the factory farm workers suffer, too. So tell us a little more about that.
Yeah, so that's an issue that I don't think gets quite as much attention, which is really a shame. And oftentimes, people will see these undercover investigations that show egregious animal cruelty, workers beating animals or just doing heinous things. And I think sometimes people think, oh, all factory farm workers are just these terrible sadists, you know, who are really cruel to the animals, and they end up blaming the workers without realizing that oftentimes the workers are just as much victims of the system. So Many of them are undocumented. Actually, slaughterhouses were purposely recruiting undocumented workers from Mexico who had been small family farmers but were driven out of business thanks to free trade agreements like NAFTA. They couldn't earn a living from farming anymore. They couldn't compete with industrial ag from the United States. So they ended up migrating here to work at slaughterhouses, where they faced the most dangerous job in the country. Their repetitive stress injury rate is 33 times higher than other factory workers, which can often cause debilitating pain for the rest of these workers' lives. Many of them are killed on the job. And actually, quite a few develop post-traumatic stress disorder, the same thing that soldiers have coming back from war, as a result of seeing so much suffering and death on a daily basis.
Right. And I also read in another book where they have increased the production time, shortened the production time, so they have to quickly get the animals down the line, and they don't even have time to properly stun them.
Right.
And in fact, one worker was quoted as saying that the animal dies piece by piece along the line. So that would be fairly traumatic, of course, for the animal, but for the person who has to witness that day after day, that's a good point.
Definitely. Yeah. And one of the nurses who worked at a facility that treated slaughterhouse workers said she could tell how fast the line speed was based on the number of injuries they had coming in that day.
And they just figure that's collateral damage or
exactly.
something.
Exactly. Yeah.
So which do you think of these approaches that you're using, these many fronts, is having the most effect on changing habits?
I think they all are. We use them to reach out to different audiences. We're able to tailor our message to reach different groups that might otherwise think this an irrelevant issue. So we're able to speak to a lot of churches and faith communities about the social justice angle, certainly a lot of community groups and classes about the sustainability angle. And I think that that's probably the environmental impacts are the ones that are getting the most attention now and really driving change in people's behavior. The movie Cowspiracy is really fantastic. It's on Netflix now, and we're talking with a growing number of people who say, oh yeah, I saw Cowspiracy and I was really shocked to learn about the environmental impacts of our food system.
Right. I think that's probably a very critical point because global warming is so much in the news now, you know, so people are tuned into that part of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's a tough job though, still, isn't it, to get people to understand all these things and to make a connection to their own life, not just to some theoretical thing out there. So anyway, that's the mission of your organization, is to help people make that connection? Or do you want to define that a little better, what your goal is?
Sure. Our mission is to empower people to help their health, the health of the planet, and animals through their daily food choices. So we really aim to educate consumers, because corporations go to great lengths to keep people in the dark about the truth of where this food is really coming from. So the first step is to show them the true conditions and the true impacts, and then empower them to realize how easy and fun and delicious it can be to eat foods that come from sustainable and compassionate sources.
Right. And that is happening more and more, though I have to say, when you watch TV, I don't know if you have noticed this, but almost every commercial is meat or dairy.
Yeah.
I mean, almost literally every single one. So it's interesting, though, that a few have made, most of them just don't have the money to advertise on national television, you know, other than, you know, Silk. That's one that advertises.
Yeah, and that's actually one promising trend that we're seeing is Silk is owned by White Wave Foods, which also owns Horizon. So they used to be more invested in dairy, and they're switching now more towards plant-based milks like soy and almond milk, and they're actually advertising them in a way that's kind of derogatory towards cow milk. So we're even starting to see major corporations hedging their bets. They can see the writing on the wall because meat and dairy
sure.
consumption has been steadily declining, so now they're investing in plant-based sources, which is really encouraging.
That's excellent. So you see some hope on that front.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we here at Voices for the Animals are really focused on the plight of animals. So tell us some about the impact of factory farming on farm animals.
Well, that's...
I mean, people need to... I mean, a lot of people know, but a lot of people don't really know, you know, what the nitty-gritty is for
right.
them.
And a lot of the people we talk to, I think, have some idea that there are factory farms out there and that, say, maybe McDonald's comes from a place that's bad for animals. But most people don't realize that 99% of meat in the United States is actually coming from factory farms. And there's been this growing movement around like local, humane, sustainable, free range, cage free. There's all these buzzwords now that companies put on the front of labels to make it seem like they're coming from better conditions. And we talk to a lot of people who say that they try to buy those. And it's great because they're trying to make a difference. They're trying to make sure that the products came from facilities that treat animals better. But unfortunately, there's very little regulation of those terms. There's even less enforcement. So again, the reality is that 99% of products, pretty much any that you see in a major supermarket or restaurant, regardless of how they're labeled, are coming from these concentrated animal feeding operations or factory farms.
But tell us a little bit about what the animals go through. Let's take a chicken, a life of a chicken, a broiler chicken.
So one of the biggest problems for broiler chickens is that they've been bred to grow as big as possible, as quickly as possible. So their daily growth rate has actually increased 400% since 1935. They grow twice as big as they used to in just half the time. So they're actually growing so big that their legs can't support the weight of their body, and many of them actually can't even walk or sometimes even stand up. And actually, many of them also suffer from heart failure, from their heart struggling to pump blood to that gigantic body. But they actually don't live for very long. Because they grow so quickly, they're slaughtered when they're just 6 weeks old, before they're even fully mature. So they live a very short life full of suffering.
Yeah.
And one thing that really shocks people is that chickens and turkeys are actually exempt from the Humane Methods of Slaughter Act, so they have no legal protections as to how they are slaughtered. Which, as a result, many of them are actually conscious when they go into these scalding tanks where they're literally boiled alive. Up to estimates between 1 and 4 million chickens are scalded alive every single year, and that's not regulated.
No.
It's not against the law.
And then, of course, the egg industry is not really any better, because I saw a film from Mercy for Animals, I think it was, and the life of an egg-laying hen is just deplorable. And all the males are basically thrown into a wood chipper.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't want to be a male chicken.
Definitely not, nor a female chicken.
Well, that either, but at least they don't go through the wood chipper. But their beaks are cut off.
You could argue that it's even worse.
Yeah, they live
longer.
I mean,
those chicks are killed immediately. But yeah, female egg-laying hens live for 1 to 2 years in these battery cages. These cages so small that they can't even turn around.
But we also have to point out that the free range is really not that much better either.
Yeah, so. Then they're living 30,000 to
right.
a shed.
And then also just a slight mention before we go to break about the pig situation. What I've seen about pigs is their life is really bad, because they also have to scald their skin off.
Yeah,
right?
I mean,
so that couldn't be too pleasant.
No, definitely not. Legally, they're supposed to be unconscious before that happens.
Oh.
But again, because it's done so quickly, that doesn't always happen.
Right. And that's the timing of those production lines once again.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right. Okay. Well, we're going to take a short break right now. Stay tuned for more with Katie Cantrell of the Factory Farming Awareness Coalition. Welcome back to Voices for the Animals on KBOO Portland. Katie Cantrell is here with us in studio today to talk about the harmful effects of factory farming on humans, the environment, and of course, the animals. Besides factory animals, factory farming also damages wildlife. I read on your website that in 2013, wildlife services killed 2 million wolves and other predators that are seen as threats to cattle ranchers. That's an amazing loss of life. I don't think most people know about that. Explain that to our audience.
I was really shocked when I learned about this as well. The Center for Biological Diversity has released some fantastic reports on the impacts of factory farming and free-range cattle ranching on wildlife. And there's this government agency called the Wildlife Services, which is the secretive arm of the USDA. It has virtually no public oversight. It operates very secretively. And they actually, the numbers from last year out, and it's even higher, they killed 2.7 million native animals in 2014 alone. So as you mentioned, a lot of those are predators like wolves, bears, coyotes that threaten the lives of livestock. They also round up and sometimes kill wild horses that are competing with the cattle for forage. Also, small animals like prairie dogs, ground squirrels that dig holes that the cattle could fall into and injure themselves. They're really wiping out these whole species of native animals in order to make this land suitable for free-range cattle. And there's also other incidental impacts as well, in addition to the direct killing, because there's huge problems with overgrazing. And there are some horrifying reports, but very well done, on the state of public lands in the West. And I think it's almost half or more than half are dangerously overgrazed. And so this is destroying all sorts of habitats because the cattle are eating the shoots of, you know, bushes and trees and things that could be coming up and providing shelter for small animals and songbirds. And it really destroys the possibility for the ecosystem to flourish when there's no habitat for these animals.
It's really a wasteland. They're
yes.
creating total wastelands.
Yeah.
And wouldn't that be at some point like the Dust Bowl then, if they just, you know, it's total dust?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, especially when you take the combination of that and then the huge amounts of water that are being used for animal agriculture, we're creating a very serious problem.
You know, I think that's a good point to make to people out there who may be very supportive of predators, you know, who a lot of people really love wolves and coyotes and foxes, and they don't really make the connection to their diet. You know, if they were to eat less, at least less meat, mm-hmm. They could help the impact on this wildlife.
Definitely. And also in the Amazon, the leading cause of deforestation is meat production.
Yeah.
So globally, I mean, we see so much sympathy for what they call the charismatic megafauna, all of these really wonderful wild animals, and people don't realize that their daily food choices are actually having an impact on global habitats.
Exactly. Well, that's a really good point to make, and I just hope that more people will tune in and listen to what you're saying and to what others are trying to tell people about, because the predators have been targeted for quite a while now.
Yes.
Yeah. How many factory farms are there in Oregon? Do you know?
Well, I can't give you an exact number, but I did a bit of research. The
okay.
Food and Water Watch has a really fantastic website on, it's a factory farm map, so mm-hmm. it's difficult to get accurate data on the specific numbers, but they have the concentrations, and so they have a map of the counties with the highest concentration. So Marion County, Klamath County, Malheur County, and Morrow County are the ones in Oregon that have the most factory farms, and most of it is cattle and dairy. And Marion County has a lot of broiler chickens and layer chickens as well.
Okay, a few years ago, I went to a hearing down in the Willamette Valley. I think it was near Salem, and a lot of people came to this hearing to oppose a new CAFO. It was a dairy, I believe, and so they actually refused that one. The USDA refused that one because it impacted so many of the neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like if neighbors were to speak up too, if you get a call, do you any coalition with farmers or people that live in these areas?
We don't so much do that work directly, but I do track that, and I just have a Google alert set up for CAFO and for factory farming. And one encouraging thing is I'm seeing a growing number of news stories coming from very small local papers, especially in the Midwest and Iowa, Indiana, Wisconsin, that are about community members rising up and saying, we do not want a factory farm in our backyard. It plummets the property values. Their houses become worthless. They develop respiratory infections, all sorts of health problems from breathing in all that fecal matter. It contaminates their wells. So there's a huge impact on the local community. And thankfully, people are finally starting to realize that.
Because that seems like that would be a good coalition.
Definitely.
To have, yeah. Get some farmers on your side.
Yeah.
You got some pitchforks.
Right.
So do any of these farms allow visitors? Have you tried to visit any of the farms in Oregon?
I haven't. Generally, they don't,
yeah.
Unsurprisingly, especially factory farms. The large industrial farms are very, very careful. That's Jonathan Safran Foer talks about that in Eating Animals. That's what spurred the book in the first place. He was having a child, and so he wanted to see where his food was coming from. And he was really surprised that these companies that brand themselves as being so family-friendly wouldn't let him actually see the facilities where the food for his child was being produced. So that's sometimes a good way to get an indicator of the farm is to ask them if you can see it for yourself. And even a lot of the smaller, supposedly local free-range ones won't allow visitors.
So have you been inside a factory farm at all then?
I've been on industrial dairy farms. I've mm-hmm. seen the yeah. calves and the hutches and the cows
yeah.
just standing in their manure and everything. I have not been inside of any chicken or pig facilities.
Yeah, I believe that the Anti-Terrorism Act? What do you call that act? Anyway, it's an anti-terrorism act, and it prevents people from going into these factory farms.
Well, yeah, so. There's a few different laws. There's the Animal Enterprise Terrorism
Act. That's it, Animal Enterprise
yeah.
Terrorism Act. Right, right.
Yeah, and then also recently a number of states have introduced these so-called ag gag laws, which actually make it a felony for someone.
Right.
There's a few different ways they're written. Some of them make it a felony for someone to lie on a job application, which undercover investigators have to do, and some of them make it a felony to take photo or video in a food production facility without permission. And it's outrageous. And it's actually backfiring because it's getting a lot of media attention, and people are starting to say, what's wrong? Why do these companies go to such great lengths to keep us from seeing how our food is being produced?
Right. So that's a good thing. That's backfiring. Excellent. So you talked a little bit about this Green Monday in the beginning. So tell us a little bit about that. What is that?
So that's a program we've partnered with recently. We're really excited about it. It's actually based in Hong Kong. It's an international initiative, and it's grown very quickly. It's now in 12 different countries around the world. And it's helping institutions and individuals make the connection between food choices and sustainability. So in the U.S., I've been partnering with them to work with universities. Oftentimes, we'll go in and speak to classes about the individual impacts of people's food choices. But then with Green Monday, we can work with the institutions to also make change. So part of that is, it's somewhat similar to Meatless Monday. We work with them to get more plant-based options, to make the vegetarian, vegan option the Green Monday special. A bit of it is just marketing techniques. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, they found that if an option is prominently labeled as vegetarian or vegan, omnivores won't choose it because they think it's only for vegetarians or vegans. And so by labeling something as the Green Monday special or the sustainable green special, it makes people who are environmentally conscious omnivores who haven't yet made that connection more likely to choose it. And we also provide a lot of informational materials, infographics about the carbon and water footprints of different food choices.
And I noticed on your website, too, what I like, and it's similar to another group that I really like called Vegan Outreach, mm-hmm. is that they allow people to have a choice. In other words, they say, if you just cut your meat consumption in half, you'll be saving a lot of animals. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a good way for people to make it their choice and not say, you've got to be a veggie or a vegan or else, you know. Because you're going to get so much resistance. So do you find that to be true?
Definitely. And, you know, everyone's different and everyone has their own path in terms of how they learn about this and what behavioral changes they want to make. And studies have shown over and over again that, you know, if you tell people you need to go vegan tomorrow, they're not going to do anything because it's too overwhelming. And giving presentations, I often talk to people who don't realize that it doesn't have to be all or nothing. So, like, I talked to this one young woman who, she was really upset. She said, you know, I tried to be vegan, but I love Indian food and the naan has butter. And so I just couldn't do it. And so now she was eating meat. Like, she'd given up. She went back to just a standard American diet. And I was saying, well, you know, you can get, like, just getting vegetarian Indian food is a big improvement. Or you can, even if you're still eating butter on the naan, you can buy soy milk or almond milk at home. I think people have this very black or white idea that they have to be perfect or they can do nothing. And so really giving them those small incremental steps empowers people to make change without feeling overwhelmed.
Yeah, I think that's a really important part of it. Absolutely. So do you think the message about factory farming is getting through and influencing people's decision about food? I know we just kind of covered that a bit right now, but give us some exact ways and some evidence where you see that happening.
Definitely. I'm really encouraged going into high schools. There's been a dramatic shift just in the last few years in terms of how much students know and how much they care about this issue. So before, I used to get questions like, what kind of animal do hot dogs come from? They didn't even know there was this complete disconnect with where the food's coming from. But now they're watching Food Inc. in classes. They're reading Fast Food Nation. They're seeing videos on YouTube or on Facebook coming through their social media. And so a lot of them now are actually asking sometimes even more informed questions than the adults I speak to are. So that's really encouraging to see young people starting to learn the truth about the food system. And we also see this reflected in numbers. So there are currently 400 million fewer animals being factory farmed every year than there were 5 years ago because meat and dairy consumption have been continuously declining. And the number of vegetarians and vegans is definitely increasing. But even more than that is the number of so-called flexitarians, or people like we were saying who might not be 100% vegetarian or vegan, but they're realizing it's not good for them, it's not good for the animals, it's not good for the planet to eat meat 3 times a day. So they're doing things like Meatless Monday or Green Monday. They're buying at the store. It's interesting. I always kind of look in people's carts. And I notice so many people, they might be buying like one little thing of meat, but they're also buying almond milk or soy ice cream. And I think that people are starting to adopt more and more of those plant-based products.
And do you find this true not just on the West Coast here or the East Coast, which are typically more progressive, but in the center, the heartland of the U.S.?
Yeah, we are based in the Bay Area, and we have 5 chapters, mostly on the West Coast. We do have one in Denver, Colorado, and one in Richmond, Virginia, so we're not quite in the heartland yet. We haven't done very much outreach there, so I can't directly speak to that. But, I mean, certainly in Denver and Richmond, we do find that students are just as interested and just as passionate.
You need to go to Kentucky.
Yeah.
I can tell you. Okay, yeah. So We only have about a minute left, so I wanted to just say you were saying you give presentations all over Yale, Stanford, Natural Resources Defense Council. So you planning to do any of those in Portland, so people would know about? What are some upcoming things that you want people to know about?
Yes, definitely. Well, we're giving presentations coming up at PSU and PCC, but the main thing that I wanted to say, we give free presentations to any schools, community groups, faith communities, businesses, and we have different versions that are tailored towards different audiences if they're more interested in animals, the environment, social justice. So if anyone is interested in scheduling a free presentation for their group, they can go to our website, which is www.ffacoalition.org, or you can email me at Katie, K-A-T-I-E, at ffacoalition.org, and we will come out and speak to any groups around Portland.
Excellent. So anybody who wants to join Katie in being a food activist, please go to her website. So Katie, thank you so much for joining us today on Voices for the Animals on KBOO Portland. This program will also be podcast on KBOO FM. Thank you all for joining us today on Voices for the Animals.
This is KBOO Portland, listener-powered, non-corporate community radio.
And now the KBOO News at noon for Monday, January 25th, 2016. In local news, Portland City Commissioner Steve Novick is set to propose a temporary 10-cent tax on gasoline sold within the city. The tax is expected to raise more than $60 million over a four-year period to be used for street maintenance and improvements. A recent study by the City Club of Portland found that up to 49% of Portland's busiest streets are in need of repair. The total backlog in street maintenance costs is believed to be more than $1 billion. The gas tax would end after 4 years. In more Portland Bureau of Transportation news, the city will begin installing more than 350 new parking meters in Northwest Portland along the 21st to 23rd Avenue corridor. The parking meters had been scheduled to be installed 3 years ago until bribery charges were leveled against the Kale Group, the company making the parking meters, and Ellis McCoy, the City of Portland's parking manager. McCoy was found guilty of accepting bribes.